Sports Hour, WGN Radio presents a conversation.
I want to make one thing perfectly clear.
A dialogue.
What are you prepared to do?
An astute debate.
Everything you can along.
And a peek behind the curtain of politics.
And then what are you prepared to do?
I think Chicago is not only the center of the country, I think it's the center of the world.
Don't tread on them.
Where did this statement come from?
This is the Sunday Spin. Your host is the Chicago Tribune's Rick Pearson.
Good Sunday morning, everyone. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune, and welcome to this week's edition of the Sunday Spin for December the 3rd, 2017. Yes, the first Sunday of December in the last month of the year. As always, this is our weekly look inside the world of politics and policy, from City Hall to Washington, all the way out to Washington, D.C. Time to grab the Sunday paper, grab that cup of coffee, and we'll do our best to start your week off with a good start. Well, happy birthday, Illinois. I heard the news. 199
tonight. 199, that's right.
It doesn't look a day over, what?
A day over 200.
Yeah. Well, yes, but as Dave had on the newscast, today kicks off the countdown to the bicentennial. There'll be events at Navy Pier for the kickoff, a year of commemoration, which I guess includes an election.
Yeah, that's right. Forgot about that.
It would only be appropriate.
Don't forget the midterm elections before we get to next November.
Right. Well, the primaries.
And the primaries, yes.
The primaries coming up, and election for governor coming up. All kinds of things. Dave and I were talking earlier. There's even a rock concert down in the Metro East area near St. Louis, a bicentennial rock concert. And, of course, it's sponsored by KSHE, which is a Missouri radio station.
A Missouri radio station sponsoring the concert for the bicentennial. Where exactly in the Metro East is this going to be?
You know, I don't know if a location actually has been set yet.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure. But now, why do you celebrate at 199 for a year? Why don't you celebrate at 200
and then move forward from that? Yeah. Well, I was looking at the bicentennial website for a number of items this morning, and you know, with all that's going on, I guess they just want this to be a big build up toward the actual birthday in 200. As you know, Rick, this has been in the planning stages for over a year now. A year and a half.
Exactly.
And so this is I did kind of wonder that same thing when I started to follow this. Is, okay, they're starting at 199 and then going up to 200. So I don't know.
You didn't get any answers.
I haven't yet.
Maybe we're going to celebrate at 199 because who knows what will happen by 200.
By 200.
Take advantage of the fact we have a state budget to actually spend on money on some fireworks or something.
Had a little fun with Dane Neal yesterday afternoon here. We were talking about it. He had a request for me to do a far-flung forecast like we do with Dane.
Okay, sure, right.
And I thought, well, you know, the bicentennial thing is in the news this week.
Vandalia?
And so I picked Kaskaskia.
Kaskaskia. Oh, well, yeah. All the way back to the first.
Right, the first one. Actually,
what's the temperature of the river?
It was a nice day down there too. It was in the 60s. I didn't get river temperature, but actually, before the actual day of statehood, December 3rd, 1818, in August of 1818, a constitutional convention was convened, and they approved a state constitution for Illinois in August of 1818. And then the statehood. I guess they had to have that before all of the statehood things could be complete.
Well, that's why the state seal has the August date on it.
Instead of the
December 3rd date.
Right. And you mentioned Vandalia, which became the state capital soon after, really. Kaskaskia was just a capital for a year or two after statehood, and then moved to Springfield. A young man by the name of Abraham Lincoln had something to do with that.
Stealing it. It was part of the theft. Well, no, because Kaskaskia, and I guess the state house in Kaskaskia, due to one of these informative videos, was like built in 87 days or something. I mean, to get in time for the legislative session?
Well, the Vandalia one was built very quickly.
Right.
And I don't know, about 87 days, but was built very quickly, and everybody complained about the fact that the plaster hadn't dried yet, and it smelled in the rooms, and how can we conduct business in an incomplete, drafty building? So...
Oh.
And so, really, the Vandalia building, which is really a worth a visit, it's a beautiful building.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
And a lot of history there. I don't know if they still do this or not, but this time of year they would do a candlelight tour of the building. That would be really nice.
Now, those are, yes, it is like the old state capitol in Springfield, too, where
that's right.
You go in the evening and in these special evenings, and it's lit by candlelight kind of thing, and you really get a sense of what it was like back then.
Exactly, because there was no electricity, so you could get a sense of what that warm feel with that warm light, but
back when you and I first started covering
something like that,
Illinois government,
something
politics,
like, right? Yeah, right.
Back when 20 people live in Kaskaskia,
now there's only 14.
I know.
Sam's been doing some checking there.
No, you had that as a far-flung like a couple months ago.
I did a couple of months ago, yeah, and we did it again yesterday.
Oh. And of course, we know which side of the river it's on.
It's on. It is what the I think the only place west of the Mississippi in the state of Illinois.
Correct.
Yeah. Because of a earthquake and the river just changing course, Mark Twain was right. There is nothing that the Mississippi River can't knock down, turn over, and laugh at. And, and he was right. And that's what it did. And Kaskaskia actually is kind of a little island now. There's
right.
a bridge that you have to cross to get there.
I do hope people will take advantage of just this year to learn a bit about the history and the history that goes beyond the boundaries of the Tri-State Tollway.
Exactly.
Into yeah. the rest of the state. And this would be a good year to go, you know, go see the Lincoln Museum down in Springfield if you've never been there.
May I also say that there is an excellent article in the travel section of the Sunday Tribune this Sunday.
There's always excellent articles in the Sunday Tribune.
Yeah, well, of course there are. Of course there are. But
I'm not a homer or anything, right?
But there's an excellent section about places to see and visit all through the state, not just, as you say, Rick, around the collar counties, but Springfield, Kaskaskia, also Hartford, where Lewis and Clark set out to go west.
You know my story about Hartford? Because I used to work in the Metro East, as you know.
Mm-hmm.
And Hartford is one of the most interesting places in Illinois. And there's the historic reason, as you mentioned, where Lewis and Clark set off. But also, in modern day, Hartford became a town filled with refineries.
Oh, yes.
And because
of... Dad had his first job down there.
Because of all of the underground pipelines linking all the various tanks and things like that, they have problems with leaks.
Mm-hmm. Big time.
So during the spring thaw, there are actually street signs posted in this small town of Hartford that says, do not leave your engine running.
Oh, really?
Yes. Yes.
Mm.
Yes. But at Hartford, Illinois, also, here's your trivia, home of actor Clint Walker.
Oh, I didn't know that. Clint Walker from Hartford.
From Hartford.
I'll write this down.
I know you can use this kind of trivia, but yeah. So, no, but there are all kinds of great places to go see and like I say, and you know, it's not like you have to go spend a week to do it.
No.
These are good, easy weekend trips to do.
Yeah, Springfield is a perfect weekend trip from here.
Yes, and you know, and if you want, keep going down 55 and you can stop in St. Louis and boo the Cardinal fans.
Make sure you touch Lincoln's nose, too. Touch the nose.
Right.
At the tomb.
Yes.
I did, back in the mid-80s, I was working briefly for the Rockford Register-Star, and it was owned by Gannett Corporation. And Al Newharth, who was the chairman of Gannett and the founder of USA Today, it was an anniversary for USA Today's publications, and he decided to go on a 50-state bus tour. So he had a custom bus built by the Bluebird Bus Company in Bluebird, Georgia. And the bus had on Torn, it could play all 50 state songs.
Oh, is that right?
Yes. And so he hired, so he goes down to Georgia to see how the bus is coming along, and he sees the project engineer, a guy named Joel Driver, and hires Joel Driver to drive the bus for the year. And so Joel's a, you know, from a
turn right here, Driver.
He's a, he's a Georgia boy, right?
Yeah.
And we're coming out of Lincoln's tomb. I was.
You were on the bus?
I was the Illinois liaison for Mr. Newhart and crew. And we're coming out of Oak Ridge Cemetery in Springfield. And Joel Driver from Georgia, God bless his soul, he couldn't help himself, started playing Dixie.
Oh,
on the bus, yes,
out of and out on of the Oak horn. Ridge Cemetery.
Coming out of Oak Ridge Cemetery.
Actually,
yes.
I understand Abraham Lincoln liked that song, Dixie, regardless of what it meant. He just liked the melody. Yeah.
Well, it. I just kind of turned ashen as we're. as we're heading to the Abraham Lincoln Hotel, you know.
Yeah. And,
yeah,
wow.
So I don't know. Maybe
what,
he had,
what irony, though.
Maybe his skin was crawling the entire time. I don't know. But happy birthday, Illinois. All kinds.
What do you say, Illinois?
You know, I've seen that. I've seen people doing.
I have a lot, a lot.
Oh, where does that come from? I mean. If you live
well,
here,
why
you know.
Do you say El Dorado instead of El Dorado when you live in El Dorado, Illinois, or
New Madrid,
or you know,
Marseilles,
or Marseilles, or Cairo, of course, instead of Cairo. That's the most popular. We could play the name game all morning.
All morning. Happy birthday, Illinois. Enjoy the warmth while it lasts. It's supposed to be near 60 today, over 60 tomorrow, and then the cold front comes in. And, you know, the warm weather, as always, this unseasonable weather. The sidewalks have been crowded and brings out the tourists. I was out at the Tree of Knowledge yesterday, out in front of Tribune Tower, and I'm glad to see that Johnny Sixnote was back with his sax.
He almost made it through White Christmas.
Almost, right?
And then I thought I heard chestnuts roasting on an open fire, but it
only
became
the first six
variations
notes.
On a chestnuts and the Christmas song.
Well, I know there were a lot of tourists out there, and how did I know this?
Oh, were there ever?
Well, how did I know this? There was a group that actually applauded Johnny Sixnote. It's like, you cannot be from here, okay? There is real street music, okay? This is not it. Please find your way somewhere else, okay? Oh, man.
That was a marathon concert out there yesterday.
And people were giving him money, too. It's don't encourage him, you know?
As for him, this is the most wonderful time of the year, as the song says.
I guess. Just, what can I tell you? Busy day in sports as well.
Yep.
Yesterday, Hawks now with back-to-back overtime losses to Dallas. Not a good situation. Crawford is out for a week or so, and although Fosberg didn't do badly as backup, and frankly, I think he merited like second star of the game yesterday. Good to see his play, and he's going to have to play well. And now we've got the game against the Kings tonight. But a lot of overtime games in the NHL yesterday too, from checking the rundown sheet. So, and I'm sorry, I won't get into my shootout rant. That's for darn sure. Well, Dave's here to keep us up on all the news. Sam has the latest sports. We'll be here to take your phone calls at 312-981-7200. That's also our text line, 312-981-7200. You can find us at Facebook at facebook.com/thesundayspin. We're on Twitter at @SundaySpin. And Engineer Bob's still trying to figure out where he can park the car that isn't marked a towable zone snow route. Remember, you can find all of our shows on WGNRadio.com. You can also get our podcast at iTunes by searching for Rick Pearson. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson. It's time for our weekly spin through national politics. And, of course, We'll start with the decision by former Trump National Security Advisor Michael Flynn to plead guilty to lying to the FBI as part of a plea deal in which he will cooperate with Special Counsel Robert Mueller's Russia investigation. Now, at most, it looks like Flynn could get 6 months in prison, and given what he was facing, that's an indication that he may have some serious information to turn over to the Special Counsel. Already, in lying to the FBI about talks with Russia's ambassador and attempting to influence a UN Security Council vote before the Trump administration took power, those are some very serious issues, and now we're learning that it was Jared Kushner, the president's son-in-law, who played a leading role in Flynn's actions. But there was some irony that Flynn now faces prison for his activities, particularly after his appearance in Cleveland last year at the Republican National Convention, where he was already a close Trump advisor.
We do not need a reckless president who believes she is above the law. Lock her up. That's right. Yes, that's right. Lock her up. I'm going to tell you what. It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. Yeah. I use hashtag never Hillary. That's what I use. I have called on Hillary Clinton. I have called on Hillary Clinton to drop out of the race because she put our nation's security at extremely high risk with her careless use of a private email server. Lock her up. Lock her up. You guys are good.
Lock her up, says the man who now faces going to the lockup. Now, for historic purposes, remember all that's at stake here, including issues of obstruction of justice within the Trump administration. And that brings back the issue of James Comey being fired as the FBI director, Trump's request to top Republicans that legislative investigations involving Russia be wrapped up quickly. Trump tweeted yesterday that he fired Flynn because he lied to Vice President Mike Pence and the FBI. Later, apparently, a Trump lawyer says that he actually wrote the tweet, which raises questions of who's really in charge of the president's Twitter account, which is a whole other matter. But still, if with that tweet, you had the president saying that he asked Comey to go easy on Flynn, and now this morning Trump says he never asked Comey to stop investigating Flynn. Okay. But Trump readily acknowledged he fired Comey about that Russia thing. In any event, Trump's use of the term witch hunt and fake news can now be interpreted, really, as a criminal investigation and news that strikes into the president's inner circle. Flynn apparently felt Trump was leaving him out to dry, and that's a change from February after Flynn was fired for lying to the vice president. Back then, Trump defended Flynn and Flynn talking to the Russians.
When I looked at the information, I said, I don't think he did anything wrong. If anything, he did something right. He was coming into office. He looked at the information. He said, huh, that's fine. That's what they're supposed to do. They're supposed to be. And he didn't just call Russia. He called and spoke to both ways. I think there were 30 some odd countries. He's doing the job. You know, he was just doing his job.
And before the president left for New York for a series of fundraisers on Saturday, he told reporters at the White House that despite the Michael Flynn plea, there's no collusion.
What has been shown is no collusion. No collusion. There's been absolutely no collusion, so we're very happy. And frankly, last night was one of the big nights.
So the investigation will continue, and we'll be watching. You're listening to the Sunday Spin on WGN.
Now back to the Tribune's Rick Pearson. It's the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN.
Good Sunday morning. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune. A lot of attention, obviously, on the issue of Michael Flynn pleading guilty. and cooperating with the special counsel. But there's not all the attention on Michael Flynn. Jeff Sessions, another top Trump ally, now, of course, the attorney general, appeared last week before the House Intelligence Committee. Adam Schiff, the ranking Democrat on the panel, said Sessions was far from forthcoming in his testimony.
I do want to express my concern over his refusal to respond to what I think is a very important question. I asked the Attorney General whether he was ever instructed by the President to take any action that he believed would hinder the Russia investigation, and he declined to answer the question. There is no privileged basis to decline to answer a question like that. If the President did not instruct him to take an action that would hinder the investigation, he should say so. If the President did instruct him to hinder the investigation in any way, in my view, that would be a potentially criminal act and certainly not covered by any privilege.
That's Adam Schiff, the ranking House Democrat on the House Intelligence Committee. Well, joining me now here in the Allstate Showcase studio is Mike Houlihan, who I said we kind of all know. We know him as Hooli, who is the author of just a fun, rollicking ride of a book called Nothing's on the Square, which says a lot about Chicago politics. But it's a tome about your time working inside the 2015 mayoral campaign of Jesus Chuy Garcia. And first off, Hooli, I don't know how to explain who you are. Okay. You are a man of many hats.
First of all, thank you for having me, Rick. Great to be here.
Well,
I haven't been up this early in a long time.
We just have to remember we're not at one of the usual places be talking. Yes.
Okay.
But how do I describe you? How do you describe you?
I'm a pretty good BS artist. I grew up on the South Side in the 19th Ward. My brother was the state rep. My dad's best friend was Tommy Fitzpatrick, the 19th Ward alderman. I think that was my first exposure to politics. I was hanging door hangers when I was about 11. I became an actor. I moved to the East Coast, and I got married there, had kids, and I moved back in 1985, and I got a job with George Ryan,
right?
The great George Ryan, and so I, between politics and show business, and I have three radio shows I produce. I'm now the chairman of Hibernian Transmedia, which is a public charity dedicated to Irish and Irish American culture, and I'll do anything to make a buck. Just about.
Playwright, author,
exactly. Yes.
Man, bon vivant, man about town. Yeah. I will tell you what I enjoyed about this book, and truly, it's kind of like as I had Ted Gregory, my Tribune colleague.
Oh, I just read his book. It was terrific.
Yes, and I'm just able to start catching up on some of these reads that I think, you know, it's Christmas time.
Absolutely.
You might want to take a look at these things as well. But with your book, for someone who doesn't live and breathe and follow politics, I think it's an excellent kind of primer.
Oh, yeah. Thank you.
Now, granted, you have your take on things.
Sure. Absolutely.
And no one's unscathed. Virtually no one's unscathed in this thing. But, I mean, because I laughed when I first read it.
Good.
Because I knew everybody in it.
Yeah.
And even people I didn't directly know, I still knew of them, and it just kind of helped reinforce what I thought. But it was all about just the various deals and side deals and, you know, plus elements of a political campaign and of a street campaign. And I don't think, you know, most people, they get their politics through watching TV ads or, you know, if they know a candidate or know an elected official, I don't think they do.
Right.
And so this, I think, is a good kind of way to get into what politics is and how it's still played. And it's
in the trenches.
And it's not different from how it's always been played.
Sure. Yeah. You know, somebody, now there's some people who take umbrage with the book. I was telling my radio co-host Skinny Sheehan that everybody says, Hooley's crazy for that book. I said, since when? It's only in Chicago when you tell the truth you become part of the lunatic fringe, you know? I'm just telling the truth. This is what happened, you know? And they all think I'm nuts.
Well, and with working for the Garcia campaign, for example, and a number of people that have been around for a long time got involved on that. And
yeah.
You make no secret of your feelings about Mayor Rahm Emanuel in this book.
Good.
Yeah. But the fact of how, you know, for example, you get brought into the Garcia campaign by someone who's also helping another mayoral candidate.
Yes. You mean Pickle Joyce?
Yes. Pickle Joyce.
Yeah.
Who we should explain who Pickle is.
It was Jeremiah Joyce's son, who's a state senator. Jeremiah was a state senator and an alderman and a Chicago policeman. Part of a great political dynasty on the South Side. But yeah, Pickle got me the initial call and said, how would you like to make some money working on the Chuy Garcia campaign? I said, how much can I make? You know, let's talk.
That's the logical next question, right?
Well, you know what? I don't know if you remember Marty O'Connor, who used to write from the Daily News here years and years ago, God bless him. He used to always say, if you're going to work in politics, get the money up front. Everything else is nonsense. And I took it to heart, you know. Because 9 times out of 10, you're not going to win.
So you may not get paid.
Exactly. So get the money.
There's been plenty of vendors that have been stiffed over the years.
It. Yeah. They're still waiting, some of them.
Right.
No,
right.
I don't play that game.
but Mike Joyce was also helping Willie Wilson.
Yes.
The African-American candidate.
Yes. Yeah.
For his campaign.
Yeah.
But there was a logic to it.
Oh, sure. And you can ask Pickle for that.
Well, but the logic being, if you're going to force a runoff.
Well, you know what? Without Willie Wilson, there was not going to be a runoff. He took enough of the black vote to force Rahm into a runoff. So that was pretty smart, I'd say.
Well, yeah. That's what I mean.
Yeah.
There are.
Without Willie Wilson, Dr. Willie Wilson.
Correct.
There is no runoff. Yeah.
It's all part of the calculation.
Yeah.
They may not be obvious at first,
no.
But
exactly.
they do reveal themselves.
Yeah.
We're speaking with Mike Hooley Houlihan, author of Nothing's on the Square.
Nothing's on the Square.
I don't want to add the G to it.
Okay.
Actually, the governor should be good at pronouncing the title of this book since he drops his G's. Nothing's on the Square. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson, the Chicago Tribune, here in the Allstate Showcase Studio in historic Tribune Tower on North Michigan Avenue. I'm joined by Michael Houlihan, Hooley, author of Nothing's on the Square. In a quick take, why did Garcia lose and Rahm Emanuel win?
Inept campaign management, the media in the tank for Rahm, $35 million in Rahm's political campaign. There it is. They spent a lot of money making Chuy look like a dumb Mexican, and it worked.
How much of it was the fact that Garcia was kind of a late entry in the race? Because, I mean, basically he was assuming the spot of Karen Lewis.
Yeah.
Karen
Lewis recruited him to get in the campaign. Yeah.
Because after her medical condition,
sure.
Her medical diagnosis.
Yeah.
So, I mean, how much of the, quote, inept campaigning, unquote, was a, or was it just people in over their skis?
That, I think, is a good point. I don't think, you know, once he was in, he got to the runoff. Then it was mano to mano at that point. That's where he lost. And that's a tough thing to make up, the amount of money they're throwing at Rahm. But also, I told Chuy this when we first started. I said, you got to kick this guy right in the nuts right off the bat. That's the way you do this. And he was like, what? You know, I said, come on, this is a street fight. You're from the South Side. You know what that is? He went to St. Rita because that's the way you deal with somebody like Rahm Emanuel. He's a bully. So I said, you got to come out firing right off the top. And he did. That wasn't in his nature. As he got into it later, in the debates, he was pretty accurate and had a lot of clarity to his attack.
And figured out, well, I mean, when the stakes were real at that point, where it's one-on-one.
Yeah.
But you write in the book, too, about, you know, the fact of trying to sell a Mexican-born candidate in the 19th War.
Right.
But how St. Rita, the Catholic League, became such a valuable sales tool.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, he was a guy who went to St. Rita Mustang. We took Chewy on Super Bowl Sunday to about 15 or 16 bars all along Western Avenue through a blinding blizzard. And they welcomed him with open arms. I mean, they were so glad to see him, and the fact that he had come out on a night like that, and then he went to St. Rita, and you could feel the vitriol for Rahm Emanuel and all those pubs. He was not well liked. So I think he was a good candidate. It's just, you know, maybe if the election was a week earlier, we would have won, not so much, you know, late to the game.
What do you think now about the fact that here, you know, as he'd been looking at a another mayoral run,
right,
and now he is the endorsed candidate by Luis Gutierrez to replace Gutierrez in the 4th Congressional District.
Well, what's the title of the book? Nothing's on the Square.
Well, that
I think Rahm Emanuel wanted Chewy out of the race. By some weird machination, he got Gutierrez to retire, push Chewy into Congress, and then you have a situation where, as Skinny Sheehan said to me the other day, you can't beat a somebody with a nobody. And right now, where there's nobody running who had that profile of Chewy for mayor, and it's going to be a lot tougher to beat Rahm.
Chewy says there's no deal, there's no quid pro quo. We're going to have him on the show
at 3:30.
And I will ask him again.
He's a politician. God bless him. You know, he's not going to give it up.
But I mean, he had been looked at one time to replace David Orr, and that
his
for
pal.
Some reason didn't materialize.
Yeah.
And now he is the Bernie Sanders endorsed candidate for Congress.
You know, I thought of I knew you were going to ask me this about was there a deal or whatever. And
how'd you know I was going to ask that?
I've been reading your columns, and I thought, you know, Rick, I'm doing some book signings all through December, and one of them is December 10th, Sunday, December 10th, at Riley's Daughter, and we're going to have Santa Claus there.
Okay.
So Santa's going to be there. So
maybe
ask Chewy if there was a deal. You know?
Maybe Santa's the one to ask.
Yes, exactly.
What other book signings have you done?
Starting out next Sunday morning at Gaelic Park out in Oak Forest, right after Mass. And then I'm heading over to Riley's Daughter from 2 to 5 on 111th Street, 4010 West 111th Street. And then the following Sunday, I'll be at the Curra, the traditional Irish pub on Northwest Highway. And then on Saturday, December 23rd, I'm at Molly's Public House in Riverside. So looking forward to meeting everybody.
It's almost like you could combine a book signing with a pub crawl.
Oh, yeah. I didn't go to school to eat my lunch.
Well, Hooley, we're going to put up a link on our Facebook page for
you can get the book on Amazon. Yeah, yeah.
And are you going to get involved in the next mayoral campaign?
Well, you know, I everybody asked me that. I don't think Chewy's going to be asking me because I sent him the book, and he I know he read it because somebody told me, but he didn't call me or anything to say thanks. So I don't think he's going to be asking me. I don't know. Depends on who the candidate is. I'm real interested in the mayoral campaign that it's going to be against Rahm Emanuel because I think he's bad for Chicago, and I would really love to work at dethroning that guy.
As anybody reads the book, you're hearing exactly what you're going to read in that book.
Yeah,
is very much from that orientation.
He's
but,
a bum.
But again, what I really like about the book is just it's such a great inside look of how a campaign runs and how campaign operatives are,
right,
and the personalities that are involved.
Well, that's what's interesting. There's so much gamesmanship and brinksmanship that goes on in the back rooms of a campaign, and You know, what'd they hire this guy for? What's he, you know, back and forth, back
spies.
And forth. Spies. Yeah, there was there spies in the yes. book. There was a guy who Pickle had a big confrontation with him. yeah, that was a good story.
Not really ever want a confrontation with Pickle.
No, you don't. That's he's a professional boxer, and now he's a boxing coach. And, yeah, he can be a scary guy.
Indeed, indeed. Michael Houlihan, Hooli. Thank you so much.
Thank you,
author of Nothing's on the Square. You can pick it up at Amazon and also just stop at an Irish pub.
That's
I'm
right.
sure there's probably copies for sale.
You can
sale,
also get
right?
signed copies at abbeyfieldpress.com. And Merry Christmas, everybody. Thank you.
And a Merry Christmas to you.
Now back to the Tribune's Rick Pearson. It's the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN.
Good Sunday morning and welcome to the second hour of your Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune. Of course, in the early morning hours of Saturday, the Senate votes 51-49 with all Republican votes on a $1.5 trillion change in the federal tax code. Senate Republican leader Mitch McConnell of Kentucky hailed its passage and said Republicans would use it to campaign against Democrats.
Well, this is a this is a great day for the country. It's been 31 years since we've done comprehensive tax reform. We have an opportunity now to make America more competitive, to keep jobs from being shipped offshore, and provide substantial relief to the middle class. There are a lot of people to thank, Chairman Hatch, Chairman Murkowski, all the folks you see behind us. We've all worked together as a team, and as you notice, at the end, there was not a single Democrat who thought this was a good idea. And so we're going to take this message to the American people also a year from now.
So that's Republican leader of the Senate, Mitch McConnell of Kentucky. But Democrats are vowing that the fight isn't over, and indeed the Senate version of the bill is different from a House Republican-passed version of the bill. On Monday, votes will be taken to take the legislation to what's called conference and conference committee to try and reconcile differences where an agreement is expected. But that having been said, Democrats say the fight isn't over. Here's the latest ad from the Democratic Senatorial Campaign Committee.
Dear Ms. Young, we regret to inform you that your tax bill is going up.
Dear Mr. Roth, you can no longer deduct your state and local taxes.
The Republican tax scheme gives huge breaks to corporations, but raises taxes on middle-class families.
You can no longer deduct the interest on student loans.
Your deduction for medical expenses has been eliminated.
How much will the Republican tax scam cost you? DSCC is responsible for the content of this advertising.
So obviously this is already part of the midterm elections. Republicans needing in Congress needing a major accomplishment to be able to take home to their districts. The question is exactly how that will play in the upcoming midterm elections, particularly with the role of Donald Trump and how in some of these Republican districts, how there are questions about their attitudes towards the president. Well, joining me now here in the Allstate Showcase studio is Bill Cadigan. He's an attorney. He's also a chairman of the Illinois State Board of Elections. And it's been a busy week at the Illinois State Board of Elections. It's like tax time for an accountant over there at the State Board of Elections, with last Monday marking the first day of filing for the March 20th primary elections.
Yep.
And now the deadline tomorrow, 5 o'clock, for candidates to file. I know you were down there taking a look at things, kind of as chairman, kind of taking it all in.
Right. No, it's nice to be here, Rick. Thank you for inviting me. And, yeah, it has kind of an opening day feel to it when you go down to that line where people line up at our office in Springfield to file their nominating petitions. As of Friday at 5 p.m., there were 564 candidates that had filed for various offices. There was probably about 400 in line on Monday morning, last Monday morning when I was there, and they had started lining up the Wednesday before Thanksgiving. So it's a lot of fun. It's an important date that gets the process of the formal election season going.
And you noted that there were a number of candidates that actually showed up themselves. I mean,
sure,
staff can, you know, political staff can file petitions. The candidate doesn't actually have to be there. But a lot of candidates do show up, and they take part in kind of this as well.
Absolutely. It's a good opportunity to motivate supporters to come down and be part of it with you. And I talked to a lot of them. I talked to a lot of the statewide candidates and members of the General Assembly that were there with staff. The members of the General Assembly literally come in with pallets full of petitions because they have so many to file. There's 177 members of the General Assembly, and all the members of the House are up, and a third of the Senate. So it's a long process for them.
And it's a good, and it's a photo op and all that.
Absolutely.
But it's, and also, you know, there's media out there too to take in the long lines.
And the weather was great.
Well, yes. And I will say there have been days where I would just stay in my car as long as possible before I had to get out and trek over there just because of the temperature drops and snow or ice down in Springfield.
Sure.
But what does the board actually do in Illinois? For most states, it's a Secretary of State's office that runs elections. What does the board actually do? And I can't say that necessarily, do you really run an election?
No, we don't. Actually, the elections are run by the local authorities, so the county clerks and local election authorities. The State Board of Elections was established in the 1970 Constitution, and we oversee basically, those local authorities in the administration of elections. We oversee the campaign finance disclosure laws. It's evenly composed of Democrats and Republicans. The chairmanship rotates every 2 years between Democrats and Republicans. I became chairman on July 1st, and I'll serve a 2-year term as chairman. We meet once a month to hear disclosure cases, complaints, and to issue rulemakings. Our meetings are held here in Chicago and down in Springfield. And our staff, we have staff in both Springfield and Chicago.
Now, the mere fact of filing petitions doesn't guarantee you're on the ballot.
No, as we should have kept Huli in here because I'm sure he's got some great objection stories. But what then happens is in a lot of cases, those petitions get filed and scanned and they can be copied, and political opponents get copies of those and they start scouring them for errors or unregistered voters or other technical problems that would get a candidate knocked off the ballot or that we wouldn't certify them for the ballot.
And a good election attorney is worth their weight in gold.
Yes, and can help a successful objection, can help launch a career. You might remember there was a young community organizer from the south side of Chicago who in, I think, 1996 knocked three of his opponents off the ballot and had a clean run through a Democratic primary into a state Senate seat where he served before being elected U.S. Senator and then was the 44th President of the United States. So Barack Obama started his career
knocking Alice Palmer off the ballot.
That's exactly right. Alice Palmer, who became, I believe, one of Hillary Clinton's most ardent supporters during the 2008 campaign. But and another objection, you know, we maybe should have kept Huli in here, but Mayor Emanuel in that 2010 campaign, his residency, because he had become President Obama's chief of staff, he moved his family to Washington. There was an allegation that he'd abandoned his residency here in Chicago, and there was a 5-day-long hearing over in the bottom of the Daily Center that was some of the best political theater you've ever seen, because I don't know if you remember that, but that hearing, there were members of the public that were permitted to come and question now Mayor Emanuel about what was his intent, and the story that he had kept his wife's wedding dress in the crawl space of the home and other items. And so obviously that worked out in his favor as well. But the technical rules are one that have to be strictly followed, and not just for their own sake, but elections are events that have a beginning and an end. And that calendar is kind of unyielding. We can't, you know, there's never been an election date that I know that's been postponed because of these sort of technical ballot access rules.
In fact, I think the most significant change came in the issue of, in recent time, was the Roland Burris special election
right.
that made actually two simultaneous U.S. Senate elections, one to finish out the
term
of Obama, and then to start the six-year term afterwards that Mark Kirk won. As I said, filing petitions is not the end story, but you have this rush to come in at 8 a.m. on the first day of filing. There's also a rush of people coming in for the 5 o'clock to want to be the last one on the ballot, too.
Right, and there's a couple of reasons for that. One, they just may need the time, and I think in this fourth congressional race, it may be that you know, there are people running for that are maybe gathering petition signatures today so that they can file tomorrow. The other reason is tactical. You know, they may want the last ballot position. And it's believed that candidates that have the first ballot position and last ballot position may do better. I don't know if that's actually true or not, but so there's people that show up between 4 and 5 tomorrow will be put in a lottery for the last position, and the people that were in line at 8 o'clock on Monday will also be put into a lottery for the first position.
Who runs the lottery?
The State Board of Elections staff, and it's conducted, I believe, in Springfield, and it's you know, kind of a fun event in and of itself. And then
I was going to say, so there's tens of races that are going to be
absolutely, yeah,
through this lottery.
Yeah, yeah, no, it's a game within the process. But it's a lot of fun to be a part of and to help oversee.
We're speaking with Bill Cadigan. He is the chairman of the Illinois State Board of Elections. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson. I'm speaking with Bill Cadigan. He's an attorney from Winnetka and chairman of the Illinois State Board of Elections. And we've been talking a little bit about, you know, this is the busy week for filing of candidacy petitions. Obviously, we're waiting to see in the 4th Congressional District with Luis Gutierrez deciding not to seek re-election, what's going to happen there and who's going to file for that. All kinds of races that we'll get an indication of by 5 o'clock on Friday. But not everybody necessarily makes that deadline, right, Bill?
No. In fact, there's some you toy with that deadline at your peril. There's been some legendary stories over the years about candidates that waited until the last day to get everything, all the petitions in, and you've got to collate them, you've got to number them, you've got to bind them and get them down to Springfield. One candidate hired a small plane to take him down there, and there was going to be a political operative waiting to meet the plane, meet the candidate and the petitions, whisk them to our offices. And when they took off, they approached Springfield, and the airport was socked in. And the campaign operative was also a military pilot, so he knew the people up in the tower, and he went up there and said, well, why don't I divert you over this field, and you can drop the petitions down into the field, and I'll take them. And the people in the tower said, no, you're not dropping anything from the skies over Springfield. So the skies parted. They were able to do the visual landing and get over there with 10 minutes to spare. The candidate ended up losing the race, but they got there.
But they got on the ballot, though.
Right. And another famous one involving a mode of transportation is, you know, Rick, down in Springfield, the freight lines that run through kind of the east part of town, our offices used to be on Spring Street, and they were near them. And as this candidate, and I don't know where they were coming from, but as they approached our offices, they were 5 blocks away when a freight train came through and the gate arms came down, and it was one of those long 100-car
right.
freight trains, and they had to wait as this thing slowly rumbled through.
And they go slow, too.
And they blow their horns.
Yes.
And when the candidate got to the office, it was 5:05. So the staff accepted the petitions and the nominating papers and stamped them with a time of 5:05. There was an objection filed against that candidate for not timely filing the petitions. And that objection was sustained. And they were knocked off the ballot because it says 5 o'clock, not 5:05. And the candidate that was knocked off the ballot was upset, very upset, and blamed his opponent's attorney, who was Mike Casper, who's got a reputation in these things for being able to get things done. And he actually claimed that Mr. Casper arranged for the freight train to come through at 4:45 and the gate arms to come down.
Mike Casper and his connections with Mike Madigan, they're powerful, but I don't know about speed control on freight trains.
I think you're right, but I don't think it hurts Mike's business at all. For
exactly.
For people to think that he can do that. So
yes.
When I've asked him about it, all I can get out of him is kind of a laugh. So
the trains in Springfield where they have rush minute and the traffic forecast in Springfield actually forecast train traffic for motorists.
Yeah, so anybody that's headed down there today or tomorrow, keep all that in mind. Get there early.
I want to talk to you about an issue that's come before the board. It's the effort to try to find duplicate voter registrations that go across state lines. And Illinois utilizes two systems. One is known as ERIC, and right. That's a system that the state pays to be a member of,
right.
and seems to have more of an independent kind of operation than what's known as CrossCheck. And CrossCheck is the one that's been in the news lately. It's basically run by the state of Kansas's Secretary of State's office. Chris Kobach, obviously, in the news because he's co-chair of the anti-voter fraud task force that the president created. Controversy about that. But there's also controversy about the security of the voter data that
right.
is submitted to CrossCheck. This issue came before the board, and the board split 4-4 along partisan lines. But there's now legislation that's been introduced in the General Assembly by Democratic lawmakers to order the state to not participate in CrossCheck.
Right.
I want to get your thoughts on this.
Well, I think we share the goal of getting all the states in ERIC. We're in ERIC, and that's established by the Pew Foundation, and you're right. It now has its own independent governance structure and operation staff, and it's the better system of the two. The problem with it is that of the surrounding states, only Wisconsin participates. The other surrounding states to Illinois, Indiana, Missouri, Iowa, Kentucky participate in CrossCheck. So to us, this voter list maintenance isn't done in a vacuum. There's a federal requirement that says states need to engage in a regular, consistent, uniform process of keeping their voter list clean. And in our mobile society, one of the ways that we do that is to exchange voter data with other states, and it gets potential matches get matched up and then sent to the local election authorities to determine if the Rick Pearson who lives in Illinois is the same person as the Rick Pearson who lives in Indiana. And the local election authorities, it's incumbent upon them to do that due diligence. So to us, it was an issue of how do we best fulfill that federal obligation now and staying in the CrossCheck system, getting assurances that the data is going to be kept secure. We just determined that was, for now, the what we need to do to fulfill our obligations under federal law. Because if you don't, the Justice Department has a record of coming in and suing, and private groups can sue. And so that's the situation we wanted to avoid. The issue of data security is one we take very, very seriously. In the summer of 2016, there was an intrusion onto our data system. The federal authorities that we worked with to resolve that said our response was exemplary. Our executive director went and testified before a U.S. Senate committee, and the chairman of that committee said that our response was exemplary. So it's a responsibility we take seriously. We believe that by using both systems, ERIC and CrossCheck, we can continue to meet our obligations under federal law and keep the data secure.
And I think there's one concern is, and it's not from Illinois because of the kind of federal mandated way to maintain the rolls, and that, you know, a certain letter has to be sent out, and,
yeah.
and this, I mean, a formal way to see, and if you don't hear back from after so many times,
that's a very labor intensive.
But Illinois does that.
Yes, we do, and there's been no allegation that we don't do it well.
But it's the fear of other states
yeah.
using data and. There's a lawsuit in Indiana over
right.
being able to use cross-check data without having to necessarily go through
right.
that process.
Yeah, that lawsuit's in its early stages, and obviously it's one we'll watch. But Indiana has kind of a record of not doing this well, and even predating that lawsuit, there was one in 2006 that said they hadn't done anything for years. So that's the problem that results. If you don't do this sort of regular housekeeping of these lists, the names grow stale, and you engage in these hurried up efforts where, you know, you can end up doing it in a hurried, not deliberate way, and canceling registrations of people that should be on the rolls. Now, even to cancel a registration in this day and age isn't something that poses a big problem, because a lot of states have same day registration. But it's an inconvenience. It slows the line at the polling place, and a lot of what we do is to keep the elections and polling places running smoothly. And having clean lists does that. And really, one of the underlying reasons why this isn't really a voter fraud issue, it's an election administration issue of keeping the lists clean, so that when county clerks send out your voter card, they're not sending out 40% of them are to people that have died or moved. There's a lot of expense associated with it, too. So keeping clean lists is something that is just a good practice with election administration.
And I know another member of the board said that Kansas had said that they were going to take steps to
yes.
try to ensure.
Yes.
Given what I heard in some of the legislative testimony about basically using antiquated security systems for data that includes, you know, last four digits of a social security number, and even the fact of just somebody who had sent a FOIA got back passwords and administrators' emails.
Yeah,
and
they were old passwords, but
understood. But yeah. but nevertheless, it's not the kind of security type you would expect in this day and age. When, as you noted, after what the state board went through, and you know, we know it was the Russians. That's what the feds say.
Yeah.
In this era of cybersecurity, at what point, I mean, does the board revisit this issue, regardless of the legislature?
Yeah, I think it's one where you have to have a constant process of voter list maintenance, and IT and security very much is a part of that. So, yeah, it's something we'll continue to watch and consistently improve upon. And if I share the goal of the folks that want to move everybody to ERIC, it's just a matter of how quickly we get there. There's nothing that I can do as chairman of the State Board of Elections to compel Indiana to join, or Iowa or Missouri. They'll have to, I think, ERIC, and like I said, Illinois, we have a seat on the board of ERIC. We're going to work hard to get those other states in. It's just a matter of time.
All right, real quickly, for information, you want to do a little public service?
I think that as people watch elections, and if they don't necessarily support a candidate, but they want to get involved, I think becoming an election judge is one very interesting and fulfilling way to do that. You go through a day's worth of training, and then you show up very early on the day of the election and greet your neighbors as they come in. You get paid for it, and you can do that just by going to your county clerk or local election authority website and find out when the training's going to be. And I would encourage everybody to do it. I've done it. I learned a lot from it. I thought I knew a lot about elections and election law until I actually sat in a polling place for 12 hours.
And you can bring Hooley's book with you to read it.
Exactly. There is some downtime. You could bring a couple of good books. But, yeah, don't plan on reading them early in the morning or late at night when people vote. So.
That's Bill Cadigan. He's chairman of the Illinois State Board of Elections. Bill, thank you so much for joining me this
morning.
Thank
you, Rick. Pleasure to be here.
We'll be back with more right after this.
Assistant, lighting aisle 5.
So many choices. Lumens? What's a lumen?
Can I help?
I just want to replace this old light bulb with something more efficient, but not too expensive.
ComEd makes finding the right LED easy. Just look for the ComEd lower price sticker and you'll save instantly.
Instantly?
Instantly.
Instant savings. Aisle 5.
Ooh.
That's smarter power made simple. Visit ComEd.com/home savings for even more energy saving ideas from the ComEd Energy Efficiency Program. ComEd, powering lives. Funded in compliance with state law.
What sets teams apart? On the scoreboard, it's points. At DePaul, it's a point of pride. It's less about hand checks and more about gut checks. Less about hardwood and more about heart. Stamina, willpower, drive. You won't find them in any playbook. but you will find them beating in the chests of every DePaul player. The DePaul Blue Demons, playing possessed. It's Big East basketball in downtown Chicago as DePaul debuts at the brand new Wintrust Arena. For tickets, visit DePaulBlueDemons.com.
Has an unknown life form inhabited your living space? A moving blob that seems to be coated in layers of sweaters and blankets? Remain calm. This may indeed be someone that actually lives in your home. Legend has it, when the homeowner turns their heat back on, the life form transforms back into the original state. Get rid of the blanket monsters in your home and get smart. Visit iwantsmart.com for a $50 rebate on our clean and check heating services or a $200 rebate on a furnace replacement.
iwantsmart.com.
Chicago Blackhawks insider, thanks to MB Financial Bank. You can see the Blackhawks play the Panthers on December 12th, ride on the ice, and tour the United Center. Enter to win at WGNRadio.com/contests. MB Financial Bank. MB means business.
Hi, it's Jamie, Progressive number one, number two employee. Leave a message at the... Hey, Jamie, it's me, Jamie. This is your daily pep talk. I know it's been rough going ever since people found out about your a cappella group, Mad Harmony, but you will bounce back. I mean, you're the guy always helping people find coverage options with the Name Your Price tool. It should be you giving me the pep talk. Now get out there, hit that high note, and take Mad Harmony all the way to Nationals this year! Sorry, this is pitchy.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We've gone past 8:35 on this Sunday morning. I'm so terribly sorry, Dave.
No worries.
I'm normally good on the clock. It's time for the news. Here's Dave Schwann.
President Trump is attacking his own FBI in a series of tweets saying the law enforcement agency's reputation is, quote, in tatters, the worst in history. The president also said they will bring it back to greatness. He was responding to reports that a veteran FBI agent was removed from special counsel Robert Mueller's investigating team. Five teenagers were injured, one critically in a rollover crash off Lakeshore Drive this morning. It happened in Lakeshore and Foster when a car was speeding. The driver lost control and hit a tree. No other vehicles were involved, but charges are pending against the driver. 199 years ago today, Illinois became the 21st state with 34,620 residents. Today there will be festivities planned to begin the bicentennial celebration, which will end a year from today. Navy Pier's Winter Wonderfest, the Presidential Museum and Library for Abraham Lincoln in Springfield are involved, and Governor Rauner will raise the curtain on the celebration at today's matinee performance of Hamilton here in Chicago. Sports, traffic, and weather next on WGN.
I'm back. That little voice inside your head. While you're out getting gifts, don't forget you or your office. Because now at Office Depot Office Max, you can save 20% on regular priced office supplies, furniture, and more. Get your 20% coupon at officedepot.com/radio or mention this ad in store. A gift for them, a gift for you.
Taking care of business.
Offer ends 12/9. Excludes tech, coffee, appliances, ink, and toner. See coupon for details.
If you could get rewarded for sleeping, would you? What about for sitting on a bench, looking out at the ocean? Or for sitting in a comfy chair, watching football on TV? Guess what? That third dream job is real thanks to Buffalo Wild Wings. You can come in, watch football, and earn points with blazing rewards just for being there. That's right. You're a professional football fan now. Brag about it to all your friends. Buffalo Wild Wings. Wings. Beer. Sports.
Terms and conditions apply. Must be a Blazin' Rewards member. To join in for details, visit BlazinRewards.com or download the Blazin' Rewards app.
Hello, everyone. Domino's here. There's a sound you should get used to. That's right, we love our customers, and we're not above a little kissing up, and that's why we have a ridiculously good deal. We're giving you half off all pizzas when you order online. Go to Domino's.com, select the coupon, and get all pizzas for 50% off menu price. But hurry, it's only valid through December 7th. Oh, yes, we did.
Online only. Limited time offer. Prices, participation, delivery area, and charges may vary. Offer applies to the pizza portion of your order only.
Your call will be answered by the next available representative. Thank you for holding. How may I assist you?
We were just broken into, and we need a home security system.
Oh, sorry. Wrong department. Please hold.
The best home security isn't hard to get. With SimpliSafe, you can get comprehensive, professionally monitored home security online without the hold time or runaround. Order now, and in a few days, be protected 24/7.
Go right now to simplisafe.com/best.
Toast the holidays with Brew Lights, the hoppiest event of the holiday season, Thursday, December 7th at Lincoln Park Zoo, where you can sip on 12 specialty beers, savor over 2 million twinkling lights, and support a Chicago icon. Brew Lights is presented by Lewis Glunz Beer, Chicagoland's premier craft and specialty import beer distributor, in cooperation with the Lincoln Park Zoo Auxiliary Board and WGN Radio. Brew Lights tickets are available at lpzoo.org/brewlights. That's lpzoo.org/brewlights.
This news sponsored by VictoryAutoWreckers.com. WGN Sports, Sam Penayanovich.
Schwani, the Blackhawks lost another close one to the Stars last night, this time in the shootout, 3-2, and the Stars swept the home-and-home thanks to shootout tallies from Alex Radulov and Tyler Seguin. Hawks go right back to work tonight. They go against the L.A. Kings. College football, Ohio State beat Wisconsin in the Big Ten Championship 27-21. In the SEC, Georgia 28, Auburn 7. ACC, Clemson all over Miami 38-3. Big 12, Oklahoma 41, TCU 17. College basketball, DePaul defeated Youngstown State 89-73. Loyola over UIC 85-61. NIU crushed Chicago State 95-77. Northwestern on the road at Purdue today. We've got the game on WGN, the pregame 2:45. Football, the Bears host the 49ers at Soldier Field. Arlington Heights native Jimmy Garoppolo will start at quarterback for San Francisco. A noon kickoff on the lakefront. Around the league, former Bears receiver Alshon Jeffrey signed a four-year, $52 million extension with the Eagles. ESPN is reporting the Packers reportedly targeting a Week 15 return for quarterback Aaron Rodgers. And reports out of New York are circulating the Giants could fire head coach Ben McAdoo as early as tomorrow. Sam Panayotovich, WGN Sports.
WGN traffic, one accident in Itasca, Illinois 390. The tollway eastbound, the off-ramp to the Eisenhower. Accident is partially blocking the ramp. Other than that, looking good on our expressways and tollways this Sunday morning. Underway now on Western Avenue, the Toy for Tots Motorcycle Parade. It started at 83rd Street, headed up to Addison later today. For traffic on the 7s or 8s or anytime on demand, get the Traffic Chicago app. It's approved by Team Hochberg at Pearl Mortgage. Just search TRAFFIX Chicago. And the traffic report sponsored by Jewel. Shop Jewel Osco and save on 6-ounce blueberries. Get 2 for $5. And USDA Choice T-Bone or Bone-In Strip Steaks, just $6.99 a pound. The forecast from the WGN Chicago Weather Center. Sunny today, high in the 50s. A chance of showers tonight. Increasing clouds, a low around 48. And for tomorrow, rain but likely, but a high around 60. Right now at O'Hare, we have 33 at Midway. At Chicago's lakefront, 40. Get Chicago news first at the top of every hour. I'm Dave Schwann on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
This is the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN. Once again, here's Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune.
Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. As we were speaking to Bill Cadigan, the chairman of the State Board of Elections, tomorrow is the last day of filing for candidates for the March 20th primary election. And that filing will include the 4th Congressional District seat now being given up by Congressman Luis Gutierrez. The congressman has endorsed Jesus Chuy Garcia, Cook County Commissioner, 2015 unsuccessful mayoral candidate. And Commissioner Garcia joins us on the phone right now. Good morning.
Good morning, Rick. Great to join you on a beautiful day in Chicagoland.
So are the petitions done?
Yes, they are. Happy to report that after mobilizing an army of people from the northwest side, the suburban, the west suburban communities, and, of course, the great southwest side of Chicago, we anticipate filing tomorrow between 5,000 and 6,000 signatures. The volunteers that have come from burbs like Cicero and Berwyn, Riverside, Melrose Park, and Stone Park, the northwest side and the southwest side, mostly people who live in those communities, are very proud of them. Hundreds of them will be collecting the final signatures this morning and afternoon, and then we will show strength in the numbers that we put on the board beginning tomorrow.
Now, we, of course, know that the current congressman has endorsed you. There are other candidates who are out today circulating petitions to also get into the race. Alderman Carlos Ramirez Rosa, Proco Joe Moreno, Already a Chicago police sergeant, Richard Gonzalez, has filed. Saul Flores, executive director of La Casa Norte. How do you run
and
this?
Maybe a couple others.
And maybe, that's right, and maybe a couple of others.
Yes.
So how do you run this campaign? I mean, you were looked at as a potential candidate for mayor again in 2019. It's an abrupt shift to go from that and also your current position as a Cook County commissioner to the more national challenge of being a congressman.
I'm ready for this challenge. There's a great urgency, in my opinion, to have a voice from Chicagoland, from the Midwest, particularly someone who has lived the experience, the realities of what it is to be an immigrant in America today. I've got credentials as a community organizer and advocate across the district, but I want to represent the folks who today are in fear of being deported if the Congress doesn't soon act on the Dreamers, the so-called the young people who were covered by the executive action issued by President Obama. I care deeply about immigration reform. It's part of what I did as a very young man, as a paralegal, when I worked in legal aid several decades ago. It's in my blood. I live in the most immigrant and working class community in the Chicagoland area, so it runs deep in the blood. The community is excited about the prospect of having someone in Congress who has lived that experience represent them in Congress. I'm eager to do it, and I'm also eager, Rick, as you might imagine, because I have some key allies who are members of Congress, people like Bernie Sanders, who has endorsed my campaign, Congressman Keith Ellison, and many others. So it's actually a very exciting prospect. And from that position, I plan to continue to be active in transformative politics within the Democratic Party. I plan to continue to voice my opinion on key issues facing Chicago neighborhoods, but also suburban communities.
We're speaking with Jesus Chuy Garcia, Cook County Commissioner, candidate for the Democratic nomination in the 4th Congressional District. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson on the phone with Cook County Commissioner Jesus Chuy Garcia, candidate for the 4th District Congressional nomination, Democratic nomination. Commissioner Garcia, I know that you were a supporter of Bernie Sanders in the presidential campaign. He, in turn, has endorsed you for mayor in 2015. Also, he's endorsed your bid, your current bid for Congress. How important and how does that play in as far as trying to get the support of progressives?
I think the Senator Sanders endorsement is a big help. I think Senator Sanders represents transformative politics in the country. He's the most popular elected official right now in the U.S., and I'm happy to have his support for many reasons. I think many folks like the association and feel that if I have the senator's housekeeping seal with me, that it's a good thing. I'm also hoping that it will help us generate small donor contributions, the kind that fueled his candidacy in the 2016 primary. That's very important to me and to someone who believes that we've got to remove the big influence of big money in politics at every level of government so people can have more trust and control and accountability over their elected officials. So I'm very proud to have his endorsement. So it's about the people and small donors that will fuel my campaign.
Now, this all was very abrupt. I mean, the fact of Congressman Gutierrez deciding not to seek re-election after 24 years, you getting in, the endorsement by Gutierrez of you. How did this actually formulate?
The congressman, Luis, decided to improve, repair some of the feelings that had come out of his support for Rahm Emanuel for mayor in 2015. He and I had not had a face-to-face. We had not broken bread for a period of over 3 years. We had a couple of phone conversations just about issues pertaining to immigration reform and issues in Congress. But he invited me to lunch late this summer. It was, you know, not eventful, just like, hey, how are you? How's family, et cetera. And then he continued to be in touch with me. And probably about 2 months ago, he asked me if I would not give him an answer, but think about the possibility of going to Congress. I told him I've never really aspired to that position. You know, it was not what I was working for.
Right.
But he said, think about it. And as I did, and with mindful of all the developments that have occurred in Washington, D.C., especially over the last year and a half, I began to see the relevance of being in Congress. I have, you know, a long history as a legislator at the city, county, and state level, and based on that experience, I feel that I'm very qualified to do this. So the conversation began to get really serious only 3 weeks ago or so, because time would run out fairly quickly. So he asked me again, you know, did you think about it? Do you want to be in on it? Because we would need to do this. I was, of course, concerned that he might be having another episode, as he did about 10 years ago, when he told several aldermen in the city council that he was going to retire.
Right.
They went into high gear, created political committees, raised money, hired consultants, got their campaigns together, and he changed his mind. I didn't want that to happen, and thus I had to look at him squarely in the eye the day after Thanksgiving, and I could tell, because he was quite emotional after serving us 25 years in Congress, to convey to me that he wanted to retire, but that he would only choose not to run if I agreed to run for the office. That's how it came, and it's only been like a week plus a few days. And, you know, it took me by surprise. It took everyone by surprise, because it's hard to fathom that someone who has spent so much time, especially being a leader on immigration issues, would all of a sudden decide that it was time to move on.
Especially at this time, obviously, with the Trump administration and moves by the Justice Department and Homeland Security involving immigrants. But obviously, as part of this, you know, questions, and you know the questions, is the issue of, you know, you now no longer becoming a potential major challenger to Rahm Emanuel in 2019, and whether there was some kind of a deal cooked.
Yeah. Let me ask, where could the deal be? I had no plans to run for the seat until Luis asked me to do so, and it's really not different from what happened in 2014 leading into the 2015 race, when Karen Lewis asked me to run for mayor. She decided not to run because of her health condition, and she promised me her support and her endorsement, so I decided to run. I had a little bit of time. People thought it was a crazy undertaking, but I did it because I thought it could further the Democratic movement in Chicago for reform and for change at the city level. For those that would speculate that there was a quote-unquote deal, is simply untrue. A deal does involve a quid pro quo, an agreed-upon exchange. There was no quid pro quo. There is no exchange. There are no secret understandings or arrangements. There are no future undertakings, no promises, no conditions to be fulfilled in the future. So what we have here, with everything that occurred, yes, late-breaking, but the fact that there will be probably seven candidates on the ballot shows that it did transpire in the light of day, in full view of the media from across the country. And I think the process could scarcely have been more open or transparent. It was done at a news conference, which was broadcast live, and it was on the front page of the newspaper. And for the record, I was not the first candidate to circulate petitions for the office. I believe I was the third candidate, in fact.
One other thing, though. I mean, you mentioned in that press conference that you do not intend to endorse the mayor for re-election should he seek a third term.
That's correct. I have no intention. I will not do it. I have too much of a record of having different views on a variety of issues with the mayor, whether it's an elected school board, whether it's school closings, what the violence in our city that continues to go unabated. We're only solving about 20% of all homicides that occur in the city of Chicago. A 26-year-old man was killed in front of our house a month and a half ago. That murder remains unresolved. I will continue to have policy differences with other elected officials, including Rahm Emanuel, and I will speak out on those issues.
That's Jesus Chuy Garcia, Cook County Commissioner and Democratic candidate for the 4th Congressional District. Commissioner Garcia, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
Thank you, Rick. Have a great day.